Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem, and how we live out our faith every day, not just individuals, but as a body and as organizations. And we'll talk about how do we allow our faith to influence not only our individual decisions, but maybe corporately as well. As we get into today's conversation, we'll talk a little bit about mission drift, the unspoken crisis facing leaders, charities, and churches. It's the title of a book written a few years back from my guest today, Peter Greer, who will join us in a moment. Peter is coming to the area, to the University of Northwestern, to be part of the Fuel Leadership Conference, which is happening Saturday, November 18th. And think about November, it seems like a long way off, but Ted, that's not that far away.
We're already halfway through October here. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
And some wonderful October weather around the upper Midwest.
Yeah, right?
And hopefully it's nice where you are. Glad to have you listening in today. So the Fuel Conference, it's a conference for leaders in any vocation. You can gain valuable wisdom from top Christian thinkers and get inspired to honor Christ daily with your life and work. So it's not just for, you know, church or business or ministry leaders. It's really anybody can benefit from it.
A great opportunity. Later on today, we'll hear from Bob Goff, one of the keynote speakers that'll be there. And we have some free tickets to give away, too.
Yes. In fact, we've set up a drawing page just for those giveaway tickets. We're going to do those here. We'll lead that up today and maybe into tomorrow as well. But if you'd like a pair of tickets for the Fuel Conference, you can just go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith Show page, and it's right there on the kind of right-hand side.
Right on the right there, yeah. You'll find that under the program tab there at myfaithradio.com.
Okay. Check that out. Sign up for tickets for the Fuel Leadership Conference coming up November 18th on the University of Northwestern campus in St. Paul. Let me introduce my guest, Peter Greer. We've had a chance to talk with him on several occasions. Really appreciate his insight and his heart for ministry. He's president and CEO of Hope International. It's a global nonprofit focused on addressing both physical and spiritual poverty through microfinance. And they serve throughout Africa, Asia, Latin America, and Eastern Europe. Got a wonderful outreach. Peter has a master's degree in public policy from Harvard's Kennedy School and speaks regularly to audiences and conferences all around the country. So we're honored to have him back with us. Written several books, including The Poor Will Be Glad, The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good, Entrepreneurship for Human Flourishing, Watching Seeds Grow. And the one we're going to talk about is Mission Drift. But Peter, first, welcome back to Connecting Faith. Great to talk to you again.
It's great to be back with you. Thanks so much for having me.
So let's jump in. Mission Drift. How is that different from, say, you know, realigning organizational priorities?
Yeah, it was interesting. When we were about to publish Mission Drift, there was a friend that reached out and almost said, please don't write this book. Do not publish it, because I know what's going to happen. Anytime I want to make a change within my organization, someone on the board or someone on the staff is going to say, no, we can't do that. That is Mission Drift. And yet organizations that don't change, we know what happens to them. So, you know, the key piece is not to say, is this an argument for change or against change? It's really to understand, is the change, is it going to better accomplish what you were created to be? And so it's certainly not an argument against change. Not all change is drift. It's simply to say, when we make change, is it so that we can better accomplish our mission, or is it part of this well-worn path, slowly moving away from the founding purpose, from the founding ideals of the organization? So it's not an argument against change. It's just saying, let's be real thoughtful to make sure that the change helps us to better accomplish our primary core purpose.
Well, of course, last week we saw the announcement from the Boy Scouts that they were going to have a major shift, it seems to me, at least in their mission. And you know, we don't have to, you know, dissect that decision necessarily. But I'm wondering, Peter, as you maybe look at that or maybe use them as an example, how does a drift like that happen? That was a pretty seismic change for them.
Yeah, so when we started doing our research, we wanted to figure out how can we learn from people and organizations that have stayed on mission. Because as we started doing the research, what fascinated us is that it was so easy to find examples of drift happening. It almost wasn't a challenge. It almost was like every rock that we would turn over, when we would look at the founding story, it was a story about an organization that was designed to do something very different than what it was doing today. And in many ways, the work that we did, the hardest part was finding what are those organizations that have remained true to who they are, that have stayed faithful to the primary purpose, and have accomplished the primary mission that they've been given. And so in that, the kind of fun part was trying to figure out what are those organizations that have stayed on mission. And unfortunately, pretty significant changes that have happened at all kinds of institutions across education. You know, Harvard University, their founding mission statement said this. It said to be plainly instructed and consider well that the main end of your life and studies is to know God and Jesus Christ. And again, Harvard, it's a great place to get an education. But when you compare it today to what it was created to be, there's a pretty wide gap. And I guess I don't know all the details of the Boy Scouts, but if they follow the well-worn path of so many other institutions, my guess is there will come a point in time when you will look at their founding documents, when you will read the stories of the founding passions, why they were created, and you will compare them to what they are, and you'll see a pretty significant gap between what they were created to be and what they currently are being. And I guess this is, you know, originally the research was not to even write a book. It was to say, how do we make sure that at this moment in time, when we are entrusted with leadership, when we are given the opportunity to steer and to influence organizations, is our legacy going to be one of faithfulness, or are we going to be part of this slow and almost commonplace story of drift? And so I think that's kind of the great invitation. That's the challenge. And one of the great joys of writing this book has been hearing stories of courageous leaders that really are making sure that these entities stay on mission and continue to do what they were created to do.
The book we're referencing is called Mission Drift from Peter Greer and Chris Horace. Chris directs development for Hope International, and Peter is the president and CEO of Hope International. So they're both obviously writing this, as he said, you know, for their own benefit, to just look at how do they stay on course. But you mentioned the phrase for that well-worn path, and I'm wondering, you know, why is it so well-worn? I mean, it seems like it wouldn't have to be so as common as it is.
Yeah, and that's one of the surprising pieces, is that we love the word drift because it insinuates this idea of a current, something that oftentimes you don't have to pay attention. And if you've been boating, doesn't matter the body of water, doesn't matter if it's the ocean or whether it's a stream or a lake, there is these currents that you're not aware of, and oftentimes it's these currents that you're not aware of that suddenly you have a moment where you come to, suddenly you look at something on land and you realize the place that you are now is not, and you simply did nothing. You just went with the current. And that to us is what is happening, is that this drift is happening, and it's happening slowly, and it's happening today. And yet for so many organizations, because it's happening slowly, because it's this undercurrent, it's not some big showdown, it's not some big decision, but it's these really the accumulation of small decisions that are allowing organizations to go and do something that, again, oftentimes is the antithesis of what they were created to do and the antithesis of who they were created to be. And especially when it comes to faith, faith slowly becomes irrelevant for so many organizations that were so clearly based on their faith as a really founding piece of their identity. And so, again, the easy part was to identify drift. The more challenging and I think more important part is to figure out, so what do we do differently to make sure that's not our story?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it happens slowly, subtly, but I assume that there maybe are some trip points where that drift begins, or maybe it's like a ratchet. It sort of clicks down on another stage. Talk about maybe some of those predictable stages.
Yeah, and so again, kind of the way that we did the research was trying to follow Jim Collins in Good to Great and identify industry experts, people that understand their particular sector, and then say, what are the stories, what are the organizations that have scaled, professionalized, and stayed on mission? And then we tried to find a counterfactual, another organization that had a similar story, founded around the same time, and yet today is doing something very different than they were created to be. And we were trying to figure out, when we looked at the stories of Drift and when we compared them to the stories of organizations that stayed on mission, we were trying to figure out, what did they do differently? And in some ways, we were trying to find causality. We were trying to say, what are, you know, the top three things that organizations do to allow the seeds of Drift to really take root in their organization? And we didn't find three, we found 12. And it has to do with, what is the process for many organizations by which you recruit and onboard new board members? Something as silly as the way that you recruit board members and the way that you vet them and the way that you onboard them, they're the ones that set the overall direction for the organization. So it comes down to people. It comes down to your recruiting of staff. So much relates to people. And then it comes to metrics. What is it that you're celebrating? If you're only looking at growth, if you're only measuring how many people you're serving, and if there's growth in the overall budget, you are perhaps unknowingly sowing the seeds of Drift. It has to do with the culture that you're creating. What are those regular habits? It has to do with, how do you keep the founding stories current? Is there any way to keep telling them, keep remembering, here's who we are? And it has to do with money. Where does our money come? The influence of donor dollars, and are we making sure that the funds that we receive are in line with our mission, and the list goes on. So it's really fun to try to identify that list of causes. And then again, most important, so what does that mean? How can we act? How can we lead? How can we serve differently? If those are the right seeds of Drift, then what can we do to fight against them?
We'll talk in the moments ahead about how we do just that. How do we fight against those tendencies to drift? Because, you know, if we are just floating along, we're not going to be aware, and it's going to happen slowly, but it will be drifting us nevertheless and taking us to a place where we hadn't intended to end up. We're talking Mission Drift, the unspoken crisis facing leaders, charities, and churches, and I think we'll find out there's some good insight for us as individuals as well. We'll get to more of that with Peter Greer, who's president and CEO of Hope International and co-author of this book called Mission Drift, written with Chris Horst, his development director at Hope International. We do have a copy of the book to give away. We'll do that at the top of the hour. We also have some tickets to give away for the Fuel Leadership Conference. Peter is one of the key speakers for this event, and we'll talk a bit about that as we go along as well. But you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and click on the Connecting Faith show page as a place to sign up to get some free tickets to the Fuel Leadership Conference. We'd love to have you be a part of it. And we'll talk more with Peter Greer in just a moment. Love those songs that encourage us to be focused and faithful and clear and determined, all those things. And it sounds good, but we can easily find ourselves drifting. And then what happens? Well, it is, as my guest today has suggested, it's an unspoken crisis facing leaders, charities, and churches. That is Mission Drift. And Peter Greer, who is the president and CEO of Hope International, it's a global nonprofit focusing on addressing both physical and spiritual poverty through microfinance. And Peter and his director of development at Hope International, Chris Horst, wrote this book even more as just a way for them to protect and guard the ministry that they're shepherding. But it's some great insight for all of us, and Peter will be one of the keynote speakers at the Fuel Leadership Conference. So we're talking about, you know, some of those points that bring about drift, not just one, two, or three, but there are a dozen of them. But one of them, Peter, you talked about was the issue of money. And I guess we always think, well, that probably is a pretty clear one, especially if it's a nonprofit or a church or charity where you get a major donor and they have influence or start giving influence, good or bad. Talk about money and donors.
Yeah, and that was one of the initial times when we realized this is an important topic. I was in Houston, and there was a publicly traded company that had a foundation, and they really liked the work that we were doing around the world to alleviate poverty. They really resonated with the places, and we operate a microfinance, microenterprise development model. So instead of giving away goods, food, supplies, we kind of shift the model and partner with individuals so they can create their own small businesses and take care of their own families and communities. And so we were working on this foundation, working on a proposal for this foundation, and they ended up calling us in for this final meeting. And overlooking the skyline of Houston, they said, "We like the model. We appreciate what you're doing." They said, "Though there's one thing." They said, "Because we're a publicly traded company, we can't get behind an organization that is so overt in your faith. You guys talk about Jesus a lot." They said, "Stop that, downplay your faith, and then we'll be able to come alongside you in a really significant way." And it was an offer on the table. It was a very large foundation. It was a very large check that they were prepared to give to Hope International. And yet we took a step back and we realized that if we accepted that check, that that would have been a compromise on the holistic model of development that we have and on the faith that we profess. And so we walked away from that check, but that was one of the biggest gifts I've ever been given because it really opened up our eyes to this very clear and very real issue of mission drift. And it started us really researching, what do we do to make sure that we, in the future, don't have a different decision when offered potentially a similar opportunity where a donor comes and says, "I like you, but I'm not fully in line with the faith component of who you are and what you do." And how do we really safeguard our mission so that our mission, it's simply not for sale?
But, of course, Peter, you could have expanded your work significantly, right? You could have helped so many more people.
Yeah, and that's where our definition of success matters so much. And if we only define our success by the size of our budget and the number of people that we're serving, then there's no question what we would have done in that situation. We would have received the check. And I think this is partially for us as faith-based organizations to really ask the question, does our faith matter? Like, is it possible to do our work without that? And we concluded that if we do not have that as a core component of who we are not having the impact that we want, and we're not doing to what God has called this organization to do. And really, for me, the moment there is that there was an individual early on that we ended up helping start a small business. He ended up growing his business. It was flourishing. And yet when I visited his home, this is when I was living in Rwanda, his home and his family was still mired in poverty. And so I thought there just wasn't enough time, so his business continued to grow, and I went back to his home, and his kids still didn't have shoes on. And I remember feeling so deflated, only to realize that, yes, his business was growing, but he was spending the increased profits on alcohol, on prostitution, and on gambling. And I thought, that's not what I'm giving my life to. You take away Jesus, and in our model, you are not having an impact, let alone accomplishing the mission by which this organization was created. And so we have a pretty clear, we have a clear idea that we're not just to be about job creation. We're also to do it in such a way that we share the hope of Christ. And that is who we are, and that's our mission, is to make sure we don't drift away from it.
Which, I guess, goes back to what you alluded to earlier. One of the key points is that to keep telling the founding story, right? I mean, you have to keep going back and communicating to others the history of why your organization is organized, right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And one of the other really fascinating examples is that St. Nicholas, we know him as Santa Claus, that he also is the patron saint of pawn shops. And maybe you're wondering, why in the world do pawn shops have a patron saint, and why is it St. Nicholas? And the reality is that pawn shops were created by the church as a way to care for people in poverty. The Franciscans opened over 1,500 of these Montes Pietatis, which are known today as pawn shops, as a way to care for the poor. And yet what was created as a way to care for people has now become an instrument of people that are trying to prey on people who are in a position of vulnerability. And so with that as the backdrop, we believe that drift happens, and it happens in all sectors, and we just want to make sure that we're doing everything possible to fight against that current and stay true to the founding purpose for which these organizations and institutions were created.
And, of course, just to, as you were just talking about that, how it starts out so well to care for, but really goes, turns 180 degrees to prey on, and that just seems like, I mean, not that we have to over-spiritualize everything, but there's certainly, we have to recognize that the enemy is at work here to sow cause drift and to turn things around subtly a little at a time to become make it become really an evil, painful.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, again, it just is so ironic that here's St. Nicholas as the patron saint of pawn shops, and yet I get a very different feeling on Christmas morning than I do when I drive by a pawn shop, and my first response is not, look at those good people, look at all the good that they're doing to serve their community and to shine brightly. That's not the sense that I get when I drive by pawn shops. And again, it's not like there was this one dramatic moment. Oftentimes, drift happens slowly, it happens subtly, and yet our research has opened up our eyes to the reality that it happens a lot, and it is happening right now. And so what can we do to make sure that it's not our story?
Well, you've done the research on how it's happened. I want to talk about how maybe we can do the research to evaluate our ministry. Maybe you're serving on a board today, and maybe a church board, or you're part of a nonprofit, a ministry that's having a significant impact. You want it to have more impact. So how do we keep mission true and not mission untrue organizations? We'll talk more about it in the moments ahead with Peter Greer. Peter's president and CEO of Hope International. And Peter and his director of development, Chris Horst, wrote this wonderful book, Mission Drift. We do have a copy we're going to give away here at the top of the hour. You can sign up for that at 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. And we also, Peter, will be one of the keynote speakers coming up here for the Fuel Leadership Conference. It's an annual event at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. Feature, among others, Bob Goff, Sky Jathani, others. Peter Greer will be one of the keynotes. We've got some tickets we're going to give away as well, and you can sign up for that online. I have an online ticket giveaway if you go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's a sign-up sheet right there, so sign up and make plans to be a part of this event Saturday, November 18th. More with Peter Greer coming up in a moment here on Connecting Faith.
Stand up for Jesus, you soldiers of the cross. Lift high his royal banner, it must not suffer loss. From victory unto victory, his army shall he lead, till every foe is conquered, and Christ is Lord indeed.
You may be a part of a board, leadership team for an organization, a ministry, or part of your church, and you want to be raising the banner high for Jesus, but know that the reality is that drift can occur if we're not careful and guard against it. We're talking about it today. Mission Drift is our subject with Peter Greer. Peters, president and CEO of Hope International, and it's a global nonprofit focused on addressing both physical and spiritual poverty through microfinance. He's written some wonderful books, including The Poor Will Be Glad, The Spiritual Danger of Doing Good, 40-40 Vision, one that we talked with him not too long ago about. And he's also going to be part of the Fuel Leadership Conference on the University of Northwestern campus in St. Paul, Saturday, November 18th. Peter, we talked a little bit about the influence of money and a major donor. It seems like today organizations are facing the challenge of maybe the court of public opinion. You know, someone decides to put an ad out on Facebook or start a campaign, and does that cause a drift as well? I don't know if you researched that at all, but these are kind of challenging times, which for Christians, at least, Christian ministries.
The ease with which you can have a very large megaphone changes a whole lot, and something that we've not experienced before. And I think it does accelerate. In some ways, it allows a targeting, and it does, I believe, contribute to an acceleration of drift. And yet, I think it also has the invitation, right? Oftentimes, there's maybe a downside, but then there's also an invitation. And I think for those of us that our faith matters, those of us our faith is central, I think the invitation that we have right now is to say, how do we make sure that people see our good works and want to give glory to our Father? How do we make sure that we are living lives that people look at and say, I might disagree with what you are saying, but I find something about your self-sacrificial love, something about that so appealing, and you can reach a larger audience in that. And I think that's part of the invitation right now, to make sure that we are living and serving well, that people look at the good work that we do. And, you know, in a backdrop, it feels like there's a whole lot of need around the world. And I think maybe there's the invitation within all of the disasters, within the global poverty, within the challenges, for the church to continue the pattern of saying, I'm going to be someone who's running towards need. I'm not going to be playing it safe. I'm not going to be hiding in my own safe place. We are, because of our faith, going to be compelled to find out the vulnerable, to find the hurting, and to say, let's show up and let's love fully. And so even if there's a disagreement with our words, there should be something compelling by the different way that we live. And I was reading Rodney Stark's book, The Rise of Christianity, and found it so compelling that the early church, when there were plagues, they were the ones that were staying behind and caring for the sick. When there was crisis after crisis, it was the church that was showing up. And so I hope that people see that. I hope that just as the USA Today article from a few weeks ago in looking at the response to the hurricanes said that 75% of the organizations responding are faith-based. I love that there are opportunities for us to continue to be people that run towards the hurting. And I know that over time that will make a difference.
Yeah, and to stay true to that mission, that purpose that Jesus has called us to, if we're sort of on the outside, or maybe we're in a board role or leadership in some way, part of a charity or a church or ministry, or even a business that seems like it's drifting, what do we do? Do we become the kind of, you know, the voice of the opposition? How do we stand for getting back on track?
You know, one of my favorite classes that I took was a class on leadership, and one of the kind of, you know, things that was just drilled home, it felt like every single day, was ultimately leadership is not about a position. Ultimately, it's about influence. And by that definition, then we all have influence. We all steward influence. And so for a person that is a donor to an organization, you have influence. And I think about one time that I sent out a video greeting, and I talked about our growth, and I talked about some different things, but I missed the central component of our faith. And there was a donor who called me and said, Peter, I want you to know that you missed what is most important. And he said, we don't support you because of all the reasons that you just gave. this is why we support you. And he was stewarding his influence, and he was giving me a gift in making sure that he was keeping me on mission. And so if you're a donor to an organization, you have influence. And if you see things that you wonder, are they drifting, call them on it. That is giving a gift. If you're a staff member, you have influence. You have the ability to exert influence when there are new initiatives, to not in a negative way, but to say, the way that we look at this, how are we making sure that this is keeping us committed to the founding purpose and identities? Maybe there's an opportunity for you to share, here's why I joined the organization. It was about this initial purpose that I found so compelling. And maybe you're a board member. Maybe you're a board member, and maybe one of the most courageous things you can do is to say, I see our growth, and it's going up, and that's good. But how do we know if we're really accomplishing the primary purpose? What do we have in place to make sure that the metrics that we're looking at a board level really are the right ones? And so maybe questioning the definition of success. So whatever role you play, my guess is the listeners, there's a variety. Some are on staff. My guess is some are board members, some are supporters. But every single one of them has the opportunity for the churches, for the charities, for the nonprofits, even for the for-profit organizations. There is an invitation to say, how do I be someone who has my oar in my hand and I'm fighting against this drift that is going to take us to a place that we know we don't want to go to?
It does seem like it really pushes us as organizations to really be clear on that founding purpose, right? To really get that settled even before we launch, right? As one of the ways to really guard against drift.
Neil, you're exactly right. The two words that came up a lot with the organizations that we studied was clarity. They knew who they were. They know their purpose. And intentionality. Because they knew who they were intentional about the habits, decisions, processes that they had embedded within the organization. And so I think for all of us, that clarity, do we even know what our purpose is? And then intentionality, are we doing the right things to make sure we do not drift?
So how did that happen at Hope International? I mean, do you have the mission posted on plaques all around the building? What are some of the things that you do to protect drift from taking place?
Yeah, and again, so if we are kind of right in our assessment that it's not one thing, it's a composite, it's all these small decisions, then what are we doing not just in one area but on the small one? And so we change the way that we recruit board members, have a structured process in place that this is a long-term deal and how we look for the next generation of board members. We change the way that we do staff recruitment and make sure that we're not becoming enamored with a resume, that we miss the opportunity to truly screen the mission fit, the purpose and passion of the individual. We change the way that we measure success. And for us, we do talk about growth, but we always talk about it third. If you look at our materials, if you look at our annual report, feel free to go to hopeinternational.org to look at it. But we say, first of all, are we staying true to our purpose as a Christ-centered organization? The second piece is, are we doing our work with excellence? Is there a high bar of quality? And then the third is, have we earned the right to grow to serve more families? So it changes even the way that we measure and talk about our success, our priorities, and our strategic planning.
One of your previous books, you address the issue of pride in doing well. Does pride play a role in mission drift and in development agencies or other charities as well?
Yeah, isn't it Augustine that talked about how pride is the tree trunk and the rest are all the branches, all the other vices and sins? And I think he was right on, and we see that in the pages of Scripture. And I think the Micah 6:8 invitation, love justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. If you only do the first two, we can be all about justice and mercy and do great work. But that third one keeps us grounded and remembers that this world is not ours to save, and that we already have a Savior, and it's not you and it's not me. And so I think that rooted in humility, rooted in our dependency on God for anything good, for anything that really is going to last, that becomes essential for us in the work that we do.
Well, Peter, we got a few minutes left, and I do want to give you an opportunity just to talk about the good work of Hope International, because people may not be aware of what you do, because you're just doing it quietly but making a difference. So just maybe what are you most encouraged by in the work as it continues to grow?
Yeah, you know, I think that there's been this growing movement that I find incredibly encouraging. And the movement has really been, maybe it's the result of short-term trips, maybe it's the result of books like Brian Fickert and Steve Corbett's book, When Helping Hurts, but this understanding that oftentimes when we go in and try to help other people, oftentimes we think that we have to do it on our own, and we bypass individuals in that community that have gifts and have abilities. And so we try to change that paradigm and start with the assumption that if we want to make a positive impact in Burundi, that there are already a whole lot of people in Burundi who have gifts, who have abilities, and don't need us to have some sort of a patronizing approach, but simply need us to walk alongside, to partner with them. And so the way that we do that is a discipleship-based model, where groups of people gather together. They're trained in business principles. They start saving small amounts of money with each other. They start thinking and dreaming and planning for the future, and they end up then having access to small loans to expand small businesses. And it's really rooted in this idea that individuals have gifts and abilities. They're ready to work and oftentimes just need a hand up instead of another hand out. And so that's our model, operate in 16 countries, and it's just been, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year, and just a terrific, terrific, yeah, kind of global team that's trying to figure out how do we really help people in providing for their own families, providing for their own churches, and really experiencing the gift and dignity that comes from hard work.
And I know you're working on a new book. Just say a word about that, too, because that sounds like a fascinating conversation.
Well, you know, it really is flowing from the work that we did in Mission Drift. But we found that the organizations that and the leaders that we most respected that had these incredible organizations having such a positive impact, the thing that they had in common was that they were more focused about building the kingdom of God than building their small little clan. They looked at the world through a lens of abundance instead of looking through a lens of scarcity. And so the title that we have, it's called Rooting for Rivals, and this idea about what would happen if all of us thought more about the kingdom than our organization. How do we practice open-handed generosity? How do we make sure we're having a bigger and grander and more compelling mission? And how do we right now not see these other organizations or churches as rivals, but as allies, as friends, and to experience a much bigger, better picture of unity within the church that I think is a necessity in this world that we live in. So Rooting for Rivals, and it comes out in 2018.
Looking forward to having you back to talk about it, if not before. And I know you're coming to town here in just a few weeks, so we look forward to having you on campus at the University of Northwestern for the Fuel Leadership Conference. Peter, great to talk with you again.
Thanks so much, Neil. Really enjoyed it.
Peter Greer, President and CEO of Hope International. You want to find out about the conversation today, Mission Drift, you can go to the website missiondrift.com, get some great resources on that, and, of course, check out hopeinternational.org for their good work. Peter Greer, President and CEO of Hope International, joining us today. He'll be part of the Fuel Leadership Conference as well, and we'll talk more about that in the moments ahead. Got our mission secured and clear, then that's going to help us withstand some of the challenges that come our way. And had a great conversation with Peter Greer about his book, Mission Drift. We do have a copy of that. We'll give away here at the top of the hour. You can sign up with a phone call at 877-933-2484. And talking today a little bit about the Fuel Leadership Conference. It's coming to the University of Northwestern in St. Paul, the campus, Saturday, November 18th. Peter's one of the keynote speakers, Guy Jathani as well. And Bob Goff, Bob's a best-selling author and speaker and founder of Love Does. Bob is kind of one of those guys that says, you know, love doesn't just stop at thoughts and feelings. Love takes action. And Bob is an interesting man, a lawyer, and serves as the honorary counsel for the Republic of Uganda to the United States, adjunct professor as well. And he talked with Joe Bender it was maybe a year or so ago when the book Love Does came out about discovering a secretly incredible life in an ordinary world. Thought we'd share a little bit of highlight from Bob Goff.
When you took that first trip, whether it was to Uganda or Somalia, where you did take that first step, what was going through your mind? Like, oh my goodness, what I did actually is making a difference. And how do you get people to do it?
Yeah, I think for the people that are listening in, I guess the idea of just taking the next step and not trying to start by making an organization. I mean, Jesus didn't have one. He just picked 12 people, and one of those was even a dud. Mm-hmm. He picked 12 people, and he said, let's go just change the world by loving them. So my first step was actually with my kids. And remember one of the stories from the book after 9/11, we don't have a television in the house, and if, the president gets a girlfriend or a plane hits the building, they ought to hear from dad. Hmm. So I told them the plane hit the building, and I asked them, if you had 5 minutes in front of the leader of any country in the world, what would you say to him to make sense of life and what you're hoping for? And so Adam was our first to go. He was 7. And he said, you know what? I'd invite him over to our house for a sleepover. I'm like, that's awesome. You remember sleepovers afterwards? You think buddies with them? So he wrote that down. And then Richard was the next one to go. And he said, I would ask them what they're hoping for. Because who knows? Maybe I'm hoping for the same thing. And he wrote that down. And then Lindsay was our last one to go. And she said, you know what? If they can't make over to our house in San Diego for the sleepover, I'd ask them if we could come over to their house and videotape an interview with them. So we downloaded the CIA website. We got the names of every leader on the whole world. I felt like I was hacking NORAD. So we got the name of every leader, king, dictator in the world, and they sent them each a letter and said, hi, we're Lindsay, Richard, and Adam Goff, and we live in San Diego, and we want to know if you want to come over for a sleepover. And if you can't make it, can we come over to your house and do a video interview and get a message of hope that we could pass on to another world leader from you.
Wow.
And so we got a post office box because we didn't want Ahmadinejad to know where we lived. Hmm. So we sent all these letters out, and then all these letters started coming back, and they all said no. They were really nice, but they said, forget it. But then the kids, got after school, they got this package of letters, and they opened up one, and it was a leader of Bulgaria. And he said, children, if you'll come to the palace in Sofia, I'll give you your interview. And the kids went nuts. They're like, oh, my gosh. And then the prime minister of Switzerland wrote to him and said, if you'll come to Bern, I'll give you your interview. And then the president of Israel wrote to him and said, if you'll come to Jerusalem, I'll give you your interview. We got 29 yeses. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
So I pulled the kids out of school. Their teachers had a cow. I'm like, sue me. So what we did is we just went around and it wasn't about us. These leaders, they didn't want to meet Sweet Maria and me. They wanted to meet these kids. So sometimes we're fooled to think it's about status and title and all that jazz. And it's really about a childlike faith. That's Matthew 18:2. Unless you change and become like children, you'll never enter the kingdom of God. That's it, a childlike faith. And guys know childish. And there's a big difference between childish and childlike. Mm-hmm. And I've been working on the childlike part. The wonder, know who invented Dippin' Dots. And I actually found the guy. I met him. He's super nice. Mm-hmm. Just be curious about everything. And if faith is a big deal for you, you'll be curious about your faith. If it isn't a big deal for you, you'll be curious about something else. I want to know how to hotwire a car. Not because I want to, do grand theft. I look in the movies, there's always a couple wires that are always right there, right? What if you're curious about everything? Mm. And then you'll be curious about things that last, and you'll want to do those.
Well, Bob, you've kind of made it your mission to help people who might consider themselves to be too ordinary to become these secretly incredible people. What makes you passionate about communicating this message that we can all be secretly incredible?
I think the idea probably starts with my own failings in that. I just look at the way that Jesus dealt with people. There's a story about him healing a couple of guys who were blind. And I thought that would be pretty cool if I healed somebody who was blind. I'd make a big deal about it. But he said, like, don't tell anybody about this. I'm like, no. And then he raised a little girl from the dead, and he said, tell no one. And I mow the lawn, and I want to get a hoodie that says, Bob mows the lawn, right? On the back, it says, yet again. Right? And so, I don't know. There's something about, like, beautiful and enduring about not making a big deal about the things you do, because we'll never be like Jesus if we make it all about us. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm a guy that's missed that. I had a stupid website that said, like, serving the poorest of the poor, as if I'm going to, like, step over poor people and, like, say, get out of here, you poser. I want the poorest of the poor. And I made it about me yet again. And so what I want to do is just, if we could just let our hair down a little bit, and I've got no speech to give to anybody, but I think we can get together in small or large venues and just talk about how could we pull this thing off? And we just don't need to make much of ourselves. But we could make much of who God is and who we might want to turn us into. Mm. But we get wrapped around the axle trying to be popular. And we're like, lose popular, because it doesn't matter. That's that idea. Like, forget what you're known for. What else would you be known for? Tell me the second thing. And popular usually isn't the second thing. It's usually the first thing people are known for. So if we could get popular out of the room, then we could just, like, substitute that for meaningful, for available, for relational, like that kind of stuff. And I used to think wishing was helping. I used to think hoping was helping. I figured out helping is helping. Mm. And so, you know, being empathetic to somebody's, that's a great start. But I want to move, at least for me, I just want to move from empathizing with somebody to actually being helpful. And people, again, are afraid that they'll mess it up. They just have great hearts, but they don't want to mess it up. And there's a guy who's smarter than me that wrote a book called When Helping Hurts. And it's just like, oh, I totally get the premise of the book, but I just think helping helps. So, but some people are so afraid they'll help in the wrong way. Go for it. Just help them out. If you mess up, you'll be the first one to know and help differently the next time. And everybody's different. Again, like, I just would be like, you know, more ready, shoot, aim. But I hope that we can help a lot of people along the way. And I'm not worried about quantifying all of this. And pure love doesn't need all the spin. I don't know if you've gotten any newsletters from me. I'm guessing not, because I don't send them. Because I'll make it about me again. And I just want to make it about the kids.
Well, Bob Goff definitely has a story to tell. His ministry, his book called Love Does. It's a nonprofit organization that operates schools and pursues justice for children in the conflict areas such as Uganda, Somalia, and Iraq. And Bob will be one of the speakers as well for this Fuel Leadership Conference, along with Peter Greer, who we talked with earlier this hour. By the way, you'll have both those opportunities to hear both those interviews posted on our Connecting Faith show page at myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com. So you're going to go check that out. But it should be a great day, Ted, coming up Saturday, November 18th, and we have some tickets to give away.
We do. It'll be here before we know it, so maybe today you should go to myfaithradio.com and register to win a free pair of tickets. It's on the Connecting Faith show page, so once you're there, myfaithradio.com, go to Programs, click on Connecting Faith, you'll see the link on the right-hand side.
Now, Fuel is a great opportunity to hear from experienced speakers and leaders on how to navigate our daily lives in light of God's calling. So, folks like Bob Goff, Peter Greer, Sky Jathani, who's one of my favorite writers and thinkers, will be there as well, several others. So we've got details. In fact, if you want to get details, you can go to unwfuel.com, unwfuel.com, to find out more about that. And again, go to our website, myfaithradio.com, sign up for get a free pair of tickets, which would be great.
Sounds good.
You'll enjoy that better. Tomorrow on Connecting Faith, we're going to talk to Dave Carter about the anatomy of an affair. I think it can't happen to you. Well, you need to listen then especially. Check us out tomorrow on Connecting Faith. Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.